You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey guys, so welcome. This is Matt's pick for TV month, and you'll hear the episode, so I'm not going to get too much into it, but this is interesting, man. I had no idea, and I mean, you know the kind of movies Matt usually chooses, and this fits the bill. You know, it's a monster movie, it's got CGI effects, but man, this one is interesting. If any of you saw Lost and thought it was a little bit too long, this is the movie for you, because it's kind of like, what if Lost was just one 90-minute long made-for-TV movie? It's got Kathy Ireland, so that places it squarely in the 90s. It's got annoying teenage precocious kid characters. It's got June Lockhart from Lost in Space. It moves at a good clip. I don't know, man. It's kind of the best. It's a lot of fun. So, thanks for listening. Enjoy. I'll talk to you soon, and thanks for supporting us every way you do, sharing us on Twitter, Facebook, subscribing, writing reviews. I know this sounds like the kind of thing that everyone says, but reviews actually make a huge difference. For some reason, at one point a few months ago, we got like 5 reviews, 10 reviews at once. We immediately appeared on a bunch of blogs, because when you review us, we're more visible. So please do that every time you can. Also, you know, come out and see me. I'm at Cineprov every time they perform. And tell me what you don't like to my face. Just, it helps. Every time you mention us, it makes us feel good. And we want to keep doing this. But if we don't hear it from the crowd, we're like a wrestler in the 80s. That just means we have to fade away. Thanks, guys.
ESO, 7 years of keeping it really geeky.
Hey! What are you trying to do? You ruined my record, man! I just bought it!
Hey, you guys!
How exciting! Spoilers!
In 6 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Bye-bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye-bye.
The Earth Station One podcast. It's time to let your inner geek out to play. You can find them at www.earthstationone.com or up on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Peace, and we're done.
Welcome to My Beat Adventure Childhood. This week, as we turn on some late night television, we watch Danger Island, or The Presence, or Tommy Lee Wallace's June Kathy Ireland Presents, the title of the movie. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of My Beat Adventure Childhood, and comedian on Cineprov, and on panel we have
Charlie Rose.
Hello, this is Human Daniel. Human Daniel speaks of own free will.
And?
Horror writer Matthew W. Quinn. And the more copies of The Thing in the Woods and the forthcoming Little People, Big Guns you buy, the more money I'll have to produce a remake of this movie. Even more money I can make a 1990s period piece.
Now, Little People, Big Guns, is that a porn?
No. Midgets with huge penises.
Sorry to disappoint you, Daniel, but it's not.
Rats.
Missed opportunities.
All right, so Matt, this is your choice. When did you watch it? How did you see it, etc.?
I think I saw it when I don't think I saw it in the first run. I think I saw it a little later because I believe it came out in 1992, so I'd have been in second grade, and I think I saw it when I was in third or fourth grade. I just saw a TV commercial for it, and Dad taped it for me on a VHS tape. So that was a while ago.
Ooh, VHS.
Well, and for those of you in the audience, if you want to watch it, they don't care about the rights, so it's in full on YouTube for some reason.
It looks like crap, though. I mean, I couldn't. It looks smeared all to hell.
Yeah, they have the DVD you could get too.
You have the DVD?
No, but it's released it was released on DVD in 2001. Somebody told me they needed money that year.
Well, I mean, I knew there was a reason 9/11 happened.
Somebody really just was running short on change for large pizza. It's like, I know what I'll do. I'll release Danger Island on DVD.
On DVD.
That'll get me a good $3 there.
And it was released, I guess, like the extra features are...
Well, by extra features, do you mean like a name change?
Yeah. Well, it was released under a different name because... Danger Island is the name of a TV show from the 60s. We were talking about the DVD. The DVD of this movie must exist somewhere. I don't think we can find it. It's free on YouTube. Watch it there. It also has all of Kathy Ireland's greatest hits on another YouTube, but related channel. It was the recommended next thing that I watched.
Kathy Ireland has greatest hits?
Playboy, like, videos.
Oh.
Also, if you watch this, they apparently made a sequel, which they attached to the end of the YouTube video, which none of us bothered to watch.
Oh, God, no.
Mm-mm.
We watched the first 92 minutes and then cut out right
after what was it, Lassie's great grandmother finished writing in her journal.
No, June Lockhart, treasure.
National treasure.
Yes.
Lost in Space, America's Mom,
Petticoat Junction.
Yeah,
I thought America's Mom was Leave It to Beaver.
Troll,
didn't see it.
She was in Chud 2, Bud the Chud.
Oh, now that you say Chud 2.
Now I've gotten your attention.
Go on.
Speaking of the critic, which we were talking about off mic, she marries Duke when he runs for president.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because she wants to rescue all the people that have been lost in space.
That's right.
June Lockhart. America's Mom, June Lockhart. She was also She-Wolf in London. Apparently.
Well, that was one of her first movies.
Yeah, when she was like 20 in 46, excuse me. So there you go. She came back as Principal Lockhart in the movie Lost in Space, which we also did.
Oh, yeah.
Barely early episode.
Many moons ago.
On that hologram, she's the one that calls home to talk about how Will hacked into the grid or something.
Yeah, and she's still making movies up to 2016, so good on her.
All right.
She's still alive. Which I didn't mean to laugh at, but she's 92 years old, so laugh all you can, oldie. So, Daniel, can you give us a plot synopsis?
I can try. Jesus, where do I begin? It's a bunch of Americans that are vacationing somewhere, I guess, in Central America or in the Bahamas or some island vacation destination, and it breaks out in a civil war. So they hastily flee, and the plane that they're fleeing on crashes, and after they bail out in the ocean, they come across this mysterious island that at first seems like it's a pretty sweet deal. But as they go on, they realize that there were a lot of government experiments that took place on this island, especially around mind control and biological weapons. And they realize that they're being stalked by a monster and that one of their friends gets turned into this creature from the Black Lagoon monster. And they have to come together and solve the mystery of the Danger Island. Ooh.
Dun, 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 dun.
That's what I got.
Surprisingly, that's a very good summary. It's concise and it covers pretty much everything.
I've had some practice.
Yeah.
That's why he's our professional. I mean, and here's the thing. The fact that I told you it is a 60s TV show should make a lot of sense because this setup, the setting is beautiful for that, right? Like the first episode, they're essentially Gilligan's Island. They're castaways. They land at this island and the first episode. And then for the next however long before it gets canceled, something new mysterious happens on the island. They discover the local villagers. They discover something weird. The fruit turns into...
Do the Harlem Globetrotters show up?
No, the Harlem Globetrotters do not show up. They do have exploding bananas that that erupt in a provocative manner.
So the fruit starts ejaculating on the women's faces about halfway through, and it's only the women eating bananas. And you could say whatever you want about this not being a whatever, but
I mean, they're
looking down the barrel of a banana.
They're peeling it, and all of a sudden, it just, it's just
maybe
all over their
face.
Maybe
banana went bad. Yeah, there you go. I'm sure it did, ladies. I mean,
you got to say, ladies.
Ladies.
Also, there's about 20 people in this show, are in this made-for-TV movie, which lets you know that it was supposed to be... I mean, you heard the upfronts. It's like Lost, but a made-for-TV movie version of it.
Well, it's so a TV Lost. Pilot. It would have, that's what they were going for, but no one picked it up.
Well, no shit. There's no budget here. Like, that's why it makes sense as a made-for-TV movie. As a pilot, it's too long, it's too much, I think.
The only name I recognize in the cast was Kathy Ireland.
That's because you don't have a passion for Nick at Night like Charlie and I.
Oh,
clearly.
My God. I guess not. Yeah. I mean, you had... so there was Eddie Velez, who played Dishpan in the final season of A-Team.
Yes.
Okay.
There
he
you
played,
go.
I believe he played Vic in this. That was
okay,
his name.
Vic the Marine Guard. Okay, I'll take it back. There were two names I recognized.
And then, of course, there is a... teenage, very young teenage, Nikki Cox.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
Richard Bramer is the other one. Or?
Yeah.
And Richard Bamer, who's Bamer, been in everything.
Yeah, yeah.
West Side Story and Twin Peaks.
And, yeah. Yep.
He came out of retirement to be in Twin Peaks again.
Yeah, and then there was Fabio. Wait, no, I don't know who
Matt
that guy
Lara,
was. He just looked
who's
pretty.
Fabio.
Yes, yes.
Who in one scene only, he's carrying a guitar with him.
Joe well, Lara.
Yeah, no, he apparently was in a lot of movies in the 80s that were like, you know, action strike adventure in various jungles where I'm sure he had plenty of opportunities to take his shirt off.
Yeah, long hair flowing. Let's list some of these just because why not. Tarzan in Manhattan because it's going to happen. Steel Warrior. Ooh, Gunsmoke, the remake. Gross. He was in a movie in 2018 called The Summer of 67 where he plays soap opera. That's about right.
How the Mighty Have Fallen.
I believe that was also Bruce Campbell's role in Fargo.
Oh, mercy. Oh, he was in that TV show, Tarzan the Epic Adventures. No shit, he was Tarzan.
I mean, twice. with that look, of course he was Tarzan.
Of course he was. And he was in a... Ooh, gross. I can't watch it. Look down these B actors' IMDb profiles because I'm like, well, this is an episode and this is an episode.
Operation Delta Force 4?
Four. The first three didn't tell the whole story of the Operation Delta Force. Okay, so we should kind of walk through this movie. We don't see much of the beginning of their lives, right? Kathy Ireland's in the middle of a photo shoot with like four other women who apparently don't make it off the island. We have... like this weird like photography shoot thing, and then all of a sudden mortars start going off behind her.
Well, mortars in quotes. I mean, it was like smoke bombs and loud noises. She was dancing like with veils.
Yeah, no, this is
like veiled scars and doing the sexy bikini dance on a beach, and I'm like wondering what type of a photo shoot is this.
This is like a PG-13 strip club scene.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
Where they're like, they're supposed to be in a gritty environment, but they can't afford the gritty and they can't show nudity, so it's just women awkwardly dancing in outfits.
Of course.
Yeah. Also, this is a movie where there are long stretches of times where you get it, and then it catches the plot up to you like our podcast, right? Like, they'll focus on her dancing for 4.5 minutes.
Yes.
And then 4.5 minutes later, the plane has crashed, they've floated at sea, and they've landed at the island. You know what I mean? Like, it's the most ADD movie I've seen in
a
while.
Yeah, no. It's interesting where they choose to spend their time. Like, the scene where they're all swimming in that lagoon.
Yeah.
Because she introduces herself as a... Well, they go, when they're on the boat, they're introducing themselves, their names, and what they do. And she's embarrassed that she's a model, so she tells everyone she's a CPA.
Fabio, also known as Joe Lore, whatever his name is, starts asking her a bunch of questions that kind of imply he's into illegal activity.
Yeah, no, it's funny.
Kind of imply. He's practically wearing a shirt that says, I must be arrested, please.
Exactly. No, it's hilarious because, you know, she's... strips down to a bikini and poses provocatively in the lagoon.
Oh, what was that scene where she's like stripping down and there are these two guys watching her?
Oh my God.
Saying, we've officially made it to heaven or
something.
Yeah,
they're like, and they're groping this rock and they're shirtless in the water. And the quote of the afternoon was, all that and she can do your taxes too.
Now, boys and girls, back in the 90s, there was this channel called Cinemax. And very late at night, occasionally, they'd air these types of movies.
Well, yeah, but there's no nudity in this. That's why this movie wouldn't be on Cinemax. But the other side of that scene, which is weird, is that Karen and... Diana.
Diana.
They're talking about, like, oh, she's beautiful if I wasn't jealous or whatever it was.
Yeah, exactly, Yeah. I'm admiring the beauty of the human form and trying not to be jealous.
Yeah, and then on the other hand, you have Gary, who's one of the guys hugging the rock, who I'm not going to say he's gay, but he's giving the delivery like it's 40-year-old version. Like, she's so pretty.
I bet she feels like a bag of sand.
Yeah. I mean, and I was like, I was talking to my wife about this. I'm like, Kathy Ireland is interesting because, yeah, she's beautiful, but like, I don't know if she'd be a supermodel today. And she looks at me and she goes, eyebrows are coming back. And I'm like, whoa.
And meanwhile, we have the guy who's pretty obviously a CIA agent who is so daintily jumping into the lagoon himself.
Fully clothed? He doesn't take off his hat. He's wearing a tie and sunglasses and a
he's got
a
this
linen suit.
He's the white linen suit. I mean, it's just, oh, it is so cliche.
Yeah,
guy who owns the island.
White guy in the tropics for sinister purposes outfit.
So Ben Horn, basically. He's Ben Horn on an island.
Oh, he's about to open like a frozen yogurt stand. Like this guy, this is the whitest white who's ever whited. But I mean, yeah, the like just to catch the plot up, the beginning doesn't matter, but it sets up the fact that they're all tourists.
Mm-hmm.
As Daniel put it, like they're on this plane trying to get out of the way of it's a banana republic collapsing. It's literally what it is, but we don't know anything about it. It just says
a small country 1,000 miles east of quote unquote the island.
Yeah, and
is this a Caribbean? Is this Pacific? I don't even know where this is.
I think it's implied Central America or Latin America.
It'd be great if it turned out that they were just like in the middle of a Great Lake or something. Like they they just ran a course, right?
Yeah, they're all filming a reality show.
That was an episode of The Simpsons, right? Where they end up in a reality show. The reality show gets bored. It gets canceled. They just get sent adrift at sea.
Oh, yeah. I'd forgotten about that.
You should. It's not great. After this, when they're essentially 30 people on the plane, 15 make it per life raft, one life draft disappears.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, there's nothing. But again, all this stuff makes it seem like, like you said, it should be a TV show because, you know, in season two, the other life raft would show up.
Yeah.
Right? Or someone would, and they'd be like, oh, it was Charles from the other life raft. You know, like, and then Steve, and then maybe another love interest would show up eventually, mm-hmm. or a precocious kid that you don't remember, and no one quite remembers, but they're there anyway because it's 1992, and it was either that or Double Dare. You know, like, the third friend from Sister Sister shows up, and
Cousin Oliver is stranded on the island and eaten alive.
Oh my god, or Twiggy from Laverne and Shirley shows up. He's like,
god.
You're about to be canceled, guys. I'm here to help you save the show.
Or maybe Wesley Crusher. Every Star Trek fan's dream comes true. The spiky octopus thing kills and eats Wesley Crusher.
Oh my god, that would be a great crossover. I wish in the 90s TNG crossed over with more shit. Like, they're just like, all of a sudden you see Picard very awkwardly trying to order a cappuccino at Friends, like at the Central Perk. I would like one of your largest lattes. And you're just like, and Worf is there wearing a comically large Yankees cap.
Will that complete your order, sir? Yes, make it so.
Make it so. Captain, we should order some sort of scone for Dr. Crusher. Like, it just all goes to shit. He ends up on the island. He just kills one of the Chud things that appears in the second act, and then we move on.
So what is it that turns Frank, and we'll go and spoil it and say that Frank is the one who becomes the monster. What is it that turns him into a monster?
It's the tentacle.
The tentacle menace from the ocean.
The thing that's got tentacles but also sea urchin spines. That chewed up him and Rick, but Rick was wearing real long pants, so it didn't do as much damage.
Right, yeah. Which is why he becomes psychic.
While developing,
when you say it like that, it just sounds stupid, Daniel.
While developing really? All sorts of facial deformities, I guess you could say he's spiked for her pleasure.
Oh, gross!
Oh God!
Gross.
Matt. Jesus.
Matt. Someone take that man's microphone away. No, but so actually. It reminds me a lot of the early Buffy the Vampire Slayer vampire makeup. You know,
the
when they
the makeup, yeah,
when they vamp out, That's what it looked like to me.
Your cheekbones jut out a lot and your eyes turn like that critter from the X-Files episode who eats people's brains.
I mean, I was thinking of the bad guy or the bad mafiosa from The Mask. But like, yeah, all it does is kind of heighten your brow line, your jaw line, your cheekbones. And
changes
then
your eyes to black.
Yep. That was the thing, because actually Frank, his eyes turned gold. Rick's eyes turned black like a shark's.
Ooh.
Like details. A doll's eyes.
Exactly. But what I really didn't understand is when Frank wakes up in the middle of the night and has to go to the water, why are the coconuts pulsating?
Dun, 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 dun.
Because somebody put the lime in the coke and... coconut and drank it all up.
Or the one I didn't get was when they're like discovered by the locals, the natives, and Vic is like about to first base it with the local girl, and she turns into a monster man.
She turns into a fish.
He's hallucinating.
He tore his hand up on that.
He tore
his hand up on that giant aloe plant when they were going through the jungle, and that must have when it kicked in.
Personally, first of all, aloe is supposed to soothe. And second, I love how it's not you. All of us are forgiving this movie, but it's a movie that doesn't explain shit. So you're like, it just doesn't try.
Well, it's a TV pilot, so I think they wanted to leave some shit to explain in the actual series. Got unlucky.
Yeah, I'm not going to write a review of this for the blog. I'm going to do how this could have gone if they made the TV show.
Whoa. You're not going to write a review?
Well, then he's going to make an erotic fiction. And then Bumblebee shows up.
Well, you can make erotic fiction out of a tentacle monster, let's be honest.
To be honest, this actually is prime for a how I would do it story, Matt.
So first O.J. Simpson would start out and say, if I had done it, but I didn't do it, but had I done it, I would have choked the bitch for...
oh, God.
I've read the book. That's the book he wrote.
I know that's the book he wrote. Okay.
So second, tentacles. Could a woman have sex with them?
There's a whole Japanese genre
that explores this
in great detail.
I think that's the reason why none of the women are attacked.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly.
Do you think that's why Kathy Ireland's embarrassed to be a model? Because she knows what's going to end up if the monster finds out?
Give it a big Charlie laugh there. No, but I mean, like, honestly, the only people who are attacked are the guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, for obvious reasons, I don't think any of the guys are actually a name until... No, I think most of them had acting jobs after this, but not before this. The women are the ones they hired to be actresses.
Well, right. Rick was the human detective in Alien Nation.
Yeah, but that's after.
This is before.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Alien Nation was an 80s television series.
Alien Nation is good.
That's some good stuff right there.
It is good stuff.
This is after that TV show has been canceled, but before the TV movies. I was a big fan of that.
Mm. What TV movies?
Alien Nation.
Never saw it.
Philistine.
Oh, I know.
I guess that's a stay tuned. I'll add it to the queue.
Well, it did start with a movie, and then it became a TV show, and then they had TV movies.
I think
be a big fan.
No. I here's the thing. I just got rid of the dish, so let's watch some Hulu, I guess.
Yeah, right.
I mean, because I love this. I mean, spoiler, I enjoyed this movie. I know Matt's afraid that whenever I talk shit about movies that I hated them, but it's the nature of the podcast. But
hey, I'm sassing this movie to hell, and I liked it too.
But like, that's the thing. Like, this weird in-between, I think that's why the masterpiece is X-Files, where they're like, it's a regular world. You can get a cup of coffee at a Starbucks and watch the big game, but there's also aliens and monster men and the Jersey Devil and vampires. So, blah. That's why shows like this and Alien Nation are great. Like, and I didn't really get it, but I understand why Lost and Fringe were such a big deal.
Yeah.
Because it's also Moogans.
Well, I mean, Bandersnatch, the Black Mirror episode that came out just as we're recording this, is kind of about the same themes.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and Poltergeist. It's why that Catholic exorcism genre works, right? It's like everything you understand is right, but also half the story. This is the other direction, which is that what if the CIA really did everything that we thought it did, thanks to some drugs, right?
Well, I mean, it's based on MKUltra, which was definitely a thing.
Yes, but that was mostly about LSD and raping people.
Oh yeah, good point.
I mean. It's not about turning coconuts into props from Family Double Dare.
The coconut full of baked beans.
And purple stuff.
And purple stuff.
And then, of course, Sunny D. First you got your beans, then you got your purple stuff, and hey, there's Sunny D.
No, but I think the reason we're forgiving, we're more forgiving of this, is because it feels like a TV movie or a TV show. Well, it's a TV movie, but it feels like a TV show, as in, yes, there's mystery now. Yes, there's nothing being explained now, but I'm going to find out those answers later.
Right, exactly.
And that's what it feels like. And so in the moment, you're not judging it as harshly.
Well, you know, Mulholland Drive started out as a movie.
And then it turned into an erotic fanfic.
And there we go. Mm.
Starring you, Nick. Did you write yourself into the story?
Mulholland Drive.
Oh, yeah. He's the cowboy with no eyebrows.
Yeah, that's one of the few movies I wouldn't write myself into. I'd be the guy in Donnie Darko who waves at people.
No, I got it. You'd be the guy that's hanging behind the Winkies that's all covered in dirt.
You know who I want to be? I'd be the bartender in the Big Lebowski at the bowling alley.
Oh, yeah,
who just throws the Oak Sodas down the line and makes a White Russian in a bowling alley because, yeah, that's a shit idea. Whatever.
But do you roll on the Shabbos?
I guess so. What? All right, no boy. what do you want to talk about?
Well, okay. There's the moments where basically Fishman...
Fighter of the Night Man.
Fishman Frank... comes back and tries to attack. Fishman Rick goes and tries to defend.
Yeah.
And so then there's this big Fishman showdown.
Fishman Rick.
Fishman Rick was like, you know, pretty awesome. He was defending the team, the home team. They find the antidote in a weird tribal hut somewhere.
Yeah, the movie's not exactly woke, if you know what
linear.
I mean.
Well, okay, so those costumes, that tribe, those costumes, it's as if they walked into a party city and said, I would like a generic tribal costume, please.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Attack of the 50-Foot Woman.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
A sword and sandal nightmare from the 1950s.
Yeah.
This is backlot finding it in a dumpster costume.
Yeah, the Polynesians or Indians, I'm not really sure what they're supposed to be, have a shrine to the scientist who sabotaged the lab and blew it up and brought them the cure for whatever it was that CIA was doing to them. And they found the last of this antidote he had created for whatever it was they were doing.
Was that the corpse they find in that hospital bed holding the note?
No, that
was some other doctor.
That was, I don't know if she ever had a name. The one who sabotaged Phil was Babcock. When I saw that when I was a kid, I thought that was Ben. Because the chief seems to recognize him. And he's always like, small world.
Yeah, no.
Oh, hell, it's so unsubtle. Every time something weird happens, it's always cut to him.
Yeah, it's true. They did paint him as a mustache-twirling villain.
They did everything they could to make you think something was going on, but we never get there because it's a pilot to a movie that doesn't exist. I actually would be really interested to see what the production schedule looked like because it's as though they also filmed this in two parts, months apart, because they're like, I guess it didn't pick up. We better complete this story.
But they shot it like they had Kathy Ireland for 3 days because she's at the start of the movie and at the end, but then she just sort of fades away.
Well, and then there's a bunch of B shots of her, right? Yeah. Like where she like walks across. For example, there's a scene where she's talking to Not Fabio for about 10 seconds on the beach. And he's like, and he goes, thanks for helping me. And she goes, yeah, I just wish you'd stay more than 3 feet around me the entire time.
Is that the scene where they're going like, you know, we've been on silent for 3 days and we've never been like 5 feet apart. And he's like, yeah, I know. And it's like, well, I'm glad you understand. Just starts running.
Which is a great scene.
Yeah.
But then she disappears again. Right. Like it's though they brought her back in to do interstitials and then she was gone filming presumably Loaded Weapon 1 or something.
Them swimsuit issues ain't going to photograph themselves.
Other things.
She probably had to get her eyebrows done.
Oh, good.
We have three precocious kids who are assholes that are completely indifferent except for the kid, the guy who steals the boat, apparently, and just wants to float at sea.
Now, I did like his line where he's like, everyone knows, they don't want to talk about it because his backstory is he's a child of divorce.
But what does that mean? Because in what context?
In the context when they know that Rick is getting sicker and something crazy is going on and the two girls like, what's going on? Something. He's like, everyone knows about it. They just don't want to talk about it.
You need to explain the context because we haven't talked about him at all. But second, that doesn't mean a fucking fucking thing to this movie. Like, he's just an asshole because they wanted kids in this.
Yeah.
The entire time I thought, oh, is that the kid who played Benny in The Sandlot? And I'm like trying to look it up. It's not.
It's not anyone. He just has the horrible overlapping bowl cut that a lot of, me included, had in the 90s. He also could have been, say, the center forward in Mighty Ducks. He could have been the striker in The Big Green. He's not any of these characters.
When you
he could have been that kid from, what was that one, where he's in the Chicago Cubs?
Oh, Little Big League. He was one of those kids of who year, yeah. Saluted his shorts.
He was a precocious kid.
You know, when you talk about that bowl cut, I'm like just thinking Abraham Simpson. We were all wearing bowl cuts, which was the style at the time.
And we had the baggy jeans. And then I strapped a Tamagotchi to my belt, which was a style at the time, after drinking some Jolts and Surge Colas.
I'd call up the radio station and say, let me listen to the Spin Doctors, which was the style at the time.
Oh, God. All those
princes all who those, adored you.
All those man mullets, which was the style at the time.
1992 was a dark time for a lot of things.
Mm. Yeah, all these dudes look like escapees from the original Battlestar Galactica.
They did.
Especially Rick.
Yes, especially yeah. Rick, our vaguely military man.
Well, or a refugee from the Rolling Stones.
Is anyone painting it black, though?
Well, I guess technically the previous scientist painted that pretty dark. When we finally get to the military encampment, I don't know what it
is. They call it the habitat, but they're not on the moon. They're on a tropical island.
And they have like a weird Doppler radar bulb on the top, which is whatever. They break in. Someone buzzes them in somehow, which we never get to the bottom of.
I think that the password really was, I want a cheeseburger and fries.
You know what? That's the best I got, too.
Now,
whatever.
For context, somebody said that.
Right. So, okay, so to explain what Matt was referring to, the asshole blonde guy, who's a teenager, presumably, buzzes. They're trying to get inside this base. There's a giant metal door, and he says, I want a cheeseburger and fries, because he saw Good Burger, apparently. And with that, they get inside this military base, and it becomes the third act of an X-Files movie. They're inside the base. It's quiet, but there's... you know, Agent Scully's off trying to figure out the science and Mulder's trying to have sex with aliens.
Oh, my.
Well, at this
wrong
point...
sci-fi show, Matt.
Well, this is part where they clearly break into roles. You've got, you know, the military guy. You've got the woman who is the clear leader. You've got the woman who's a scientist. The precocious male kid is the computer expert. June Lockhart is the narrator. And... the teenage girl is into mysticism and wants to learn more about I Ching. I don't know why that's relevant to this, but apparently it was going to be very relevant to the storyline.
You needed the fourth character thing.
And then they find the dead chick.
That happens right away.
Yeah.
And it just says, kill me or something on it.
Forgive us.
Forgive us. There we go. And we do, because we forget about it.
And the expository journal of doom. They went off chasing him. They're all going to be dead by dark. I'm just going to sit here with a glass of wine. And then June Lockhart's like, that wine must have been a little stronger.
She said sassily. That's what it said in the script. There must have been something else other than wine in this cup. She said like a snarky bitch.
You got an actual script? Well, I was wondering if somebody might
look
it up.
So that concludes our episode when Matt learns about sarcasm today.
Damn, Matt learns about sarcasm. We teach Matt about sarcasm.
That toddlers don't drink coffee.
Well, I did find the whole novelization of Labyrinth online once in like a Word document.
Okay.
So I was wondering,
was it real or did someone do it as a fan?
It was the Labyrinth novelization. So I saw your screen over there is all white, so maybe might have found a Word pad or something.
Okay, important question. Since this was a Labyrinth novelization, was it a pop-up book?
The X-rated pop-up book.
It's available at Target. The novelization by ACH something. Yeah, there we go.
Pop-up book, thrusting forward book.
An origami how-to. It's a graphic novel that's 200 pages long. There we go. Featuring 20 previously unpublished illustrations. There you go. I just imagine how sensual those illustrations are. Anyway, so we've been doing this for a while now. Matt, is there anything else you want us to touch on, being this is one of those ones that you thought of?
Well, let's see. Throughout around this, Rick starts either hallucinating or maybe he's possessed of everything that happened before. Mm-hmm. So he's talking to people who aren't there.
Oh, my God.
And everyone starts following him around.
Oh, right. That's because that's how they solved the mystery of the island, because Rick's psychic and can pick up on those memories or whatever.
This is where you can tell that they're like, oh, the pilot hasn't been picked up. We need to wrap this story together somehow, because it doesn't make any sense at the moment. Because literally he starts touching consoles and he hears radio messages from like 20 years ago.
It's like, it's like Bioshock. You pick up an audio diary and then you listen to it and you slowly uncover the plot.
Yeah, well, please, since 1992, this is like Myst. You've been in the library for 20 minutes now. Have you found the book you're looking for, says the NPC? No, I haven't planned the book. Would you like to help find the book that you're looking for? Yeah. So he finds the plot. Non-seeing Rick finds the plot and ends up being able to wrap this together. Turns out that there's science going on that we don't understand. It was never explained. But they find the antidote. They find the antidote thanks to an anecdote. And after a fight scene on an elevator...
Between the two fishmen.
Between the alternate take of The Shape of Water happens. And one fishman defeats the other fishman with an injection and then both die. And they both get buried in the yard. And no one's ever rescued. Right? The SS Minnow never shows up.
No, they don't.
And it fades off with, we have to, like, learn to survive and explore the mysteries of this terrible place.
Yeah, and June Lockhart is our narrator, which is because she's the only one who apparently can read or act.
Yeah, for some about 20 minutes into the movie, she pulls a notebook out and starts taking notes in a journal and have voiceovers.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, she does have gravitas.
She does. In the remake, she'd be played by Betty White, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Is she going to feed people to Fish Frank like Betty White is feeding people to the alligator?
Oh, in Lake Placid?
Lake Placid.
Oh,
a crocodile?
You know?
Crocodile, yeah.
Crocodile, alligator, it's all the same.
Are you correcting that difference in a movie like Lake Placid?
Good point.
She's feeding the fishigator.
Fishigator, what not of this earth?
Or the, is Larry the Cable Guy with Fishigator with new dipping sauce.
Oh, or, cool! It got me a new dipping sauce.
Or feeding.
Woo, don't get sauce with me.
Or feeding people to the tentacle creature with the weird electronic squealing voice. Also, speaking of tentacle monster, that's also never explained. We only see like a tentacle of it the entire time, and then it disappears. Right?
But I'm sure, the smoke monster, it was intended to be explored in depth.
It had its own B plot.
Exactly.
It fell in love with the Loch Ness monster.
Exactly.
Confession, I've only ever seen one episode of Lost.
I tried to watch the first season and got real pissed off about halfway through.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm one of the suckers who watched it all the way to the end and has never forgiven myself for that.
Turned out it was purgatory, huh?
There's a line in when they're all in the boat after the plane goes down, you know, maybe we all died in the crash and this is the afterlife.
Yeah. I mean, and that's just the thing that they pegged to the board and they said we'll get there eventually. I mean, and that's why X-Files should have ended after season 6 or 7, because at a certain point you just want to fade to black and just say
and we're done.
Or I mean, spoiler alert for a 20-year-old show, but it's like Sopranos. At a certain point, a guy enters the room with a gun in a members-only jacket,
yeah,
and then it fades to black, and then you end the movie you want. The second you end up talking about heaven and hell, unless that's your whole premise, unless you're like The Good Place and that's your premise, don't do it. It's not your place to do it. Don't do it. And I'm sorry, Lost is not that place,
What
man.
The fork are you suggesting?
Holy shirt. At this point, I think we should go around and give our final judgments. Matt, you're last. Let's start with Charlie Boy.
All right. So basically, I mean, it had the makings of a great television series, in my opinion. Granted, a little bit low budget because it was the 90s. I think it was a little bit, it would have been before its time. That's probably why it wasn't picked up. It had potential.
I could have pictured this being picked up and like lasting one season on Fox and then getting canceled and then Shout Factory puts it on DVD 20 years after the fact. It kind of has just one of those shows. It was always intended for like a cult audience, and for what it is, I guess it's okay. And just what it is now though, as a TV movie, it doesn't really explain a whole lot. The cast really isn't all that good. It's intriguing and you can tell that they had some great ideas, but I don't know, as it stands, I mean, it's free on YouTube. You can go watch it and make up your own mind.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting threads they could have explored here. As these guys have been saying, it could have been Lost 10 years earlier with a very 80s cast, but there must not have been enough interest. It was all right.
I mean, I guess if this is my final thought, I don't even know what to make of it. I was utterly charmed and fascinated by it. I think the biggest problem is it tried to explain too much. If you wanted to just be a mystery, keep them like two steps behind the eight ball, you know, like a cop in a bad movie, right? Like in a bad horror movie, just leave the cop two steps behind. Who gives a shit? I'm totally fine with that premise. I think it's neat. I think Kathy Ireland was kind of... Kathy Ireland and June Lockhart were the best parts of this movie. I mean, it's not even that Kathy Ireland is just eye candy. It's that she plays her part perfectly. She shouldn't be there. She knows she shouldn't be there. She's struggling with everyone else. June Lockhart is the matriarch, the maternal type, who's taking care of the kids, making sure they're quiet. Everyone else is just panicking. The movie comes together fine. Look at it. It's free. You can, like, for 90 minutes, you could do worse. Just only watch the first half. Apparently, there's another movie attached. Not worth your time.
Everyone else there is just panicking and trying to make out with a native chick.
We're out of time, though. Stay tuned next week. We're doing Daniel's pick next.
Oh, that's going to be fun. Then.
What is it?
Back in 1999, NBC released this all-star version of Alice in Wonderland with Deb from Napoleon Dynamite as Alice, so that's what we're going to be doing.
Yeah, and we're starting the season with Merlin, with Martin Short, and we're ending the season with Martin Short.
As the Mad Hatter.
As the Mad Hatter. So that's what you call symbiosis, I guess? I don't know.
Bookends, that's what that is.
Well, and as someone who just knew where his bread was buttered, he deserved to be on TV. Thanks, guys.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is produced by Do Better Podcasting and a member of the ESO Network. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Daniel Suttis and Anne Burke. It is produced by Daniel Suttis, Matthew Quinn, and Anne Burke. Thomas Herman is our consultant. Nick Hoffman is our executive producer. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find it at incompetech.com. It is licensed under the Creative Commons license. Thanks.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.